Welcome to Live Daf, your online Daf Yomi Shir.
Shalom Aleichem and welcome back to today's Daf. Bava Metzia Daf Lamed Daled. We are holding on Lamed Gimel and Beis. Four lines off the bottom. So in the Mishnah we learned that the owner of the pikadon, of the deposited item, at times it can be a behemoth or a ketam, is more than happy to have the shomer, the fellow guarding the item, who lost it or who, in this case, had it stolen from him, when the shomer comes forth and offers to compensate the owner, instead of just swearing and walking away, he offers to pay for the stolen item. The owner is appreciative of that, and he says, look, you're so nice to me, and I want to give you something. I want to give you that potential perk that might come about if, in fact, the ganav is located down the road. In which case, he has to pay not only the keren, the principal, he has to add the fine, the double payment, the kefil, or the dalet behei, if he shechts or sells it. So the Mishnah tells us that the owner grants that privilege, that right, that collection right to the shomer. Here comes a question. How? Technically speaking, how does this commitment, how does this transaction take place? How does the shomer gain rights to the kefil? When does it happen? Maskef l'rami bar chama. Here comes a question. V'ha'ein adam makna davar shelo b'loilo. When the shomer comes forth and offers to compensate. Look, I know the item was stolen, you feel bad, here, take the money. At that point we say, okay, the owner accepts it, accepts payment, but in return grants the shomer the right to collect that potential kefil. But is that kefil already here? Is it in the present or is it in the future? It's not here yet. It's davar she'lo b'olam, hasn't yet materialized. How can you sell, how can you give something which you don't even have yet? It doesn't even exist. Even according to Rameh's Shita, that you can, in some cases, affect a transaction, a kinyan, on something which has yet to arrive. But that's in specific cases, where you expect it to come, and it's sort of almost here. Right? Hanemilu kigod peiros dekel. You sell him the produce of your palm tree. You can do that. Because you expect it. It's going to happen. According to the laws of nature, of Teva, you're going to have those dates next spring. They're bound to come. So it makes sense to talk about them. It makes sense to sell them or to give them. There are things which are anticipated. They're expected. Within the realm of reasonability, of reality, right? But here, by the kefil of the ganav, it's a shot in the dark. So, let's go back a step. When the owner gives the animal to the shomer, okay, please watch over it, all that, right? So at that early point, it must be, says Rashi, that the kinyan for the shomer, the moment that he acquires that ability to eventually take the kefil from the ganav, if it will be stolen from him, etc., etc. Evidently, that process must be triggered, must be initiated early, way back, when the owner gives the animal to the shomer. Rashi says, "Shemosh chamimeno das amanas kein." In which case, we view the shomer's meshicha, the kinyan on the animal, with this in mind. He's taking it with this in mind that eventually, if in fact it gets stolen and he comes forth on the next, like a nice boy and offers payment, then he'll get the rights to this animal. But the thing is that at that early point in the process, it's so far out, it's so unlikely that it's going to materialize into a kefil payment. Why? Mi'emar de meganva. Who says it's going to be stolen to begin with? That's number one. Himtu tzelem de meganva. Even if it will be stolen, mi'emar de mishtakach ganav. Who says we'll locate the ganav? Who will pay the kefil? Mi'mishtakach ganav. Even if you locate the ganav, we're still not done. Mi'emar de mishalom. Who says he's going to pay the kefil? Remember, kefil is a fine, it's a knas. Dilma maydu miftar. He has an easy way out. He admits, yeah, I stole it, and then he's potter from kefil. So basically, you're three steps removed from actually materializing this dream. So how can you say that the owner gave this to the shomer? It's not a reality. Amar Rava, the answer is like this. Nasa ka'im raloi. the way we get around this problem is like this. It's as though the owner told the shomer, when he gives him the animal way back when, to watch, it's as though he told him at that point, look, it's presumed that this is his, you know, thinking. If in fact it will be stolen, you'll be happy to pay me, right? You'll be willing to come forth with payment. If that happens, I'm giving you a right to this animal from now, so it's retroactive. It's not going to happen then. If it's stolen, you pay, you have it from today. And right now, the animal's here. So he's giving him with that in mind. So now it works. So l'mafreya, retroactive, is different. Because when you pay me, it's yours starting from way back when, from today. Maskev l'Rav Zeira, yach, if that's the case, that the owner is actually granting ownership of this cow, if in fact it gets stolen and he pays. So basically, when he does pay for the geneva, it's his retroactively from Rosh Chodesh Cheshvan, when he got it from the owner, right? So it's his, it's totally his animal, which earns him the rights to all the benefits resulting from this animal, all the income produced from this animal, including the kefal. But hold it, there's another benefit. The animal produces shearings, wool, right? Offspring, let him get that too. If it's truly his animal, the shomer actually becomes the owner, so let him get everything. Let him get the shearings and the offspring. Why did we learn otherwise? Rice says chutz. He doesn't get that. If it's his, it's his all the way. Elam Rav Zeira Nasek. It's as though he told him. We assume his mindset is, yeah, it's yours. Except chutz migizaseu leseu. You can get the extras, but not the actual basic, you know, product that an animal produces. Shearings and the offspring. But my Pascha, what brings us to that conclusion? How do we know what he had in mind? Stop in the most, it's presumed. Shvacha da asa me'alma avad inish de makni. External benefits, external income, like kefal, which is not from the animal itself. A person is willing to give it to the shomer. But shvacha da asa migufa. Shvacha da migufa avad inish de makni. But he's not willing to give away, you know, the basic product that an animal produces. That's, why should he give that away? That's absolute. It's predictable. He wants to keep that. He's willing to give him, you know, the chance to collect the kefal. So, basically, we had a kasha. How could you give something which doesn't yet exist? The kefal is not yet here. The answer is no. He's giving him ownership of the animal itself, pertaining to the kefal. How do we get around the question of the gizois and blodois? We answered that, you know, that was accepted from the deal. Yigadam, there's another version, Amar Rava. So the question was, why doesn't the shomer also get ownership of the gizeis, right? The bloodies. The answer is like this. We interpret the deal between them is like this. It's as though the owner tells him, when it will be stolen and you will offer payment, I'm not giving it to you from today. I'm giving it to you from the moment before. One moment prior to the theft. That's when it's yours. So it's not a problem of davar shelo b'lo elam because the animal's there. It's an existence, right? So he's giving him ownership of the animal, but not from today, rather from the moment before the geneva. So now we sort of circumvented the question of the gizois and velades, all the sharings and etc. That the animal produced from now till then, of course, belongs to the real owner, right? So we sort of got around that question. My benaya, so what difference between the first pshat and the second pshat? First pshat was that when the owner actually hands the animal to the shomer way back when, he's giving him ownership if in fact it gets stolen and he pays for it. And the second pshat is that the transfer of ownership occurs a moment before the theft. But now the difference is, Kushi did Rav Zeira. Beautiful, because Rav Zeira had a question. Rav Zeira wanted to know what happened to the gizis and velodis. Why doesn't that go to the shomer? So, you know, we had a hard time trying to, you know, address that question. According to the second teretz, very simple. He only assumes ownership the moment before theft. So, of course, anything that the animal produced up until that point goes to the real owner. Inami, another difference between these two pshatim is the kaima ba'agam. Suppose the animal was sitting in a, you know, ownerless, public area, agagam, some swamp, some, grazing area. not in the chatzer, not on the property of the shomer. So now, if we go with the first version that the owner grants ownership at the moment of transfer, when he gives him the animal, way back when he gave him ownership rights, if in fact this, you know, development will occur, so the shomer is kind of, because at that point he made a mashicha, he took it, he made a kinyan. But if the ownership only occurs, the transfer only occurs a moment before the theft, and at that point the animal was not in the chatzer of the shomer, how does the shomer going to be kind of it? He has to make an act, a maisa of mashicha, an act of acquisition, which he doesn't have here. So it doesn't work. So that would be the difference between the two pshat. Bottom line, the shomer gets rights to the kefil. What do you mean? Dovar shelibel oilam. No, he had ownership in the animal retroactively. Either retroactive from the moment of handing it to him or a moment before the theft. Shilam l'ratzel l'shava, the shomer offered to pay. Rather than swear, he gets the kefil. Amar b'chir ba'amar v'yechon, he comes a chiddush. Loy shilam, when we say paying, it doesn't mean shilam mama, she actually paid. Even just offering payment is enough. Because he's putting the owner at ease. Look, I'm not going to give you a hard time. Here, take the money. Elikiva sha'amar haredi mishalom. Once he declared his willingness to pay, that's enough to give him the rights to the kefil. Ava v'shilay shilam. It's none, but the Mishnah says, shilam v'larotzel l'shava. He paid. He actually paid. Shilam in, only if he paid. Loy shilam loy, without paying, it doesn't work. Apparently, you need actual payment. Not like Rabbi Yechanan. That offering is enough. Eimel sefer. Well, let's move on to the next part of the mission. Nishba v'larotzel l'shalom. He opted to swear rather than pay. In that case, he doesn't get the kefil. Let's make a deal. Time of the l'ratz, that's only because he was unwilling to pay. But if he was willing, that's enough. Ha, ratza. Afa b'shul even though he didn't actually hand the money over, that's enough. So we have sort of conflicting inferences in the Mishnah. Ella rather mehol lekel mashmino. We don't really have a clear-cut conclusion from the Mishnah. It's which one is the, which one to go with. But bottom line, Rabbi Yechanan clearly tells us that expressing willingness, offering to pay, that's enough. Tanik of Asid Rabbi Yechanan, in fact, we have a brisa which supports Rabbi Yechanan's contention. Oh, here we go to a renter. You rent a cow. V'nignavana gets stolen. V'amar Allah, the renter says, look, I'm going to give you an easy time. I already mashalim and nishba. I'm just going to pay for it rather than denying and swearing. No. So he paid it up. No, he offered to pay. Then we track down the ganav. And he's going to pay kefil, right? Mishalim tashlum kefil to who? La seicher. Although the seicher didn't actually lay out the money yet, but he expressed willingness. He offered. That's enough. Like Rabbi Yechanan. Omer Papa, let's go down the list of all possible situations. All possible shomrim, right? We have the shomer chinam, who's watching it for free. We have the shomer sachar, getting paid a fee. We have the, Seicher, who's renting. We have a Shoyel, a fellow who's borrowing the item. Now, Shoyel Achinam, Kimen Shoyel Pashati. Shoyel Achinam admits that he was negligent. I'll tell you, I was negligent. That's how it got stolen. And here, take payment. Right? Machn Likfela. In this case, the owner grants him the right to access the Kefil, if in fact the Ganav is located. You know why? Because he was an upstanding fellow. He paid straightforward. Because the Shomer Chinam had an option to walk away. He could have claimed that it was stolen, it was lost. He didn't. He admitted to the facts. He was negligent. He offered to pay. He gets the kefil. Likewise, Shomer Sachar, a fellow who's being paid to watch. Once he admits that it was stolen and he's obligated on that, the owner gives him the kefil for the same reason, because he was a cooperative individual, the boy, because he always had that choice of pater nafshe b'shvuro mesa. He could have claimed the animal, collapsed, it died, there was an inus, an accident. He didn't do that. So therefore, he has a right to the kefil. And finally, shoyel, shoyim ha'reinu mishalim, let's say a borrower, says, look, I'm responsible, I want to pay. Loi makn likfil, in this case, he doesn't get the kefil. You know why? He had no way out. A shoyel is fully responsible in all situations, pretty much. But my havalil miftar nafshe, what excuse could he have come up with to exempt himself? He had no choice in the matter. There's only one. B'meisa machat malacha. He could have claimed, look, I borrowed the animal to plow with it, and it died on the job. Meisa machmas malacha, which is the only instance that a shayel is potter, because after all, he borrowed it to work with it, right? So he could have claimed that, but no, that's not a realistic option. It's so uncommon for it to happen in that fashion. So, you know, he wouldn't have even alleged that it happened that way. So it's not really an option. So when he admitted that he's chayev, he wasn't really doing us much favors, and therefore the owner is not willing to give him the kefil, because he just, you know, fulfilled his basic obligation. He didn't really come beyond the letter of the law. There's another version. Amar Papa, no, a shoyl as well, a borrower too. Shoyl not mikimu she'amar ani mashalim. Once he offers to pay, makni lekfela, the owner gives him the kefil, because after all, he did have a card in his pocket. The boy, because if he was willing, if he really wanted, patzer namshei b'meisim machs malach, he could have claimed that it died on the job. So since he didn't, rather he offered to pay, he gets the kefil. Amalei Rav Zvid. Rav Zvid responded to Rav Papa. Hachi Amar Abayi. You should know that Abayi said the shoyl at sheyishalem. In contrast to the shoyl machinim asher mesachar, which according to Rabbi Yechman, the offer to pay is enough to give him the kefil. When it comes to a shoyl, you know what? A shoyl has so much personal benefit. He's borrowing the item, he's using it. I'm expecting more from him. Simply offering to pay is not enough. At sheyishalem. Once he pays, then he gets the kefil. Otherwise not. My time of why? Why is he different? Hoyl v'chol hanoa shaloi. Since he's fully benefiting from the item, he was enjoying it, he was using it without having to lay out a nickel. Bidi Bura, just by simply offering verbally, that's not enough. Loi machnik feel, he's not going to give him the kefil. Tanaka was saying to Rav Zvid, we have a riot to this point. Hashoel par mechaber, you borrow a cow, v'nignava, and it got stolen, v'kidim hashoel v'eshilem, the borrower steps forward and he pays. Then we track down the thief. Mishal tashlam kefil. Who is he paying the kefil? Lashoyl, because he earned the rights to the kefil because he paid. Okay, so it's a right to Rav Zvid that payment is required to give him the rights. Now let's go back a second. Rav Papa told us we have two versions of Rav Papa. In the first version, Rav Papa says that the shoyl who verbally offers to pay doesn't get the kefil. In the second version, Rav Papa told us, no, even a shoyl who offered to pay gets the kefil. Now this brisa says the shoyl will get kefil if he pays, if he actually pays. Listen to comment of Rav Papa, vadali abati yufta. So this isn't going to be a kasha to the first lashon of Rav Papa, who says that if he offers to pay, he doesn't get the kefil, but if he pays, he actually pays, he'll get the kefil, as per the brisa. However, listen to Basra, according to the second version of Rav Papa, that even offering to pay is enough. So perhaps the brisa, which says that he only gets the kefil if he actually pays, is a kasha. Amar Rav Papa, no. Why is the brisa superior to our Mishnah? What does our Mishnah say? The Tani, it says Shilam, right? The Shomer paid. And we learned before, it doesn't mean paid, it means offered to pay. Vokimna, but Amar, he offered to pay. Chanam, here as well on the brisa. The Shoyel paid? No, he didn't pay. But Amar, he offered to pay. And that's enough to give him the rights to the kefil. Midami, how could you compare the two things? Hasan like Tani Kidim. The Mishnah just says Shilam. So it can mean offer to pay. Hachak Tani Kidim, here it says that the Shoyel, the Kidim HaShoyel, he came forth and he jumped ahead and he, you know, really was cooperative. Kidim means he really, you know, participated, he's cooperative, he offered, he volunteered, he initiated. So it sounds like more than just speaking. He actually came up with the money. No, my kidim. Well, you know what kidim means? Kidim ba'amar. He immediately offered cooperation and he offered to pay. And that's enough to give him the kefil. Asks the Gemara, hold it. If you back up a bit, we had another price. A seicher who offered to pay. Amar, he offered to pay. That's enough to give him the kefil. So there we employ the lashon amar. Gabi shoyl kidim, as opposed to the price which discusses the shoyl, we have a unique expression, kidim, a different type of a phrase, right? So it sounds like two different things. Shrami nadav kiktoni. Apparently, by the seicher, amar is enough. By the shayel, payment is required. Verbal, offering is not enough. Well, midi gavi adadi tani, who says the two brises were studied next to each other in the same base medrash, in which case the discrepancy in phraseology would reflect a different, interpretation. Perhaps, you know, the Tana of this Brisa chose this language, and the Tana of the other Brisa chose a different mode of expression, but they're both one and the same point, offering to pay. So the Gemara, Shalino Latanoi, but actually they investigated the matter. They asked the experts in the Brises, the Tanoi of Rabbi Rabbi, the Tanoim, and those Bati Medrash, those yeshivas, who were experts, you know, they compiled the Brises. Verami, actually they confirmed that these Brises were learned with each next to each other. Gavadad Tanya, they were learned in close proximity. So basically, since they were learned together in the Beis Medrash, and one Bryce mentions Omar, the other one mentions Kidem, it sounds very likely that Kidem means specifically paid his money, and in fact, by Yishael, he will only get the kefal if he actually paid. Okay, let's go back a bit to Rabbi Yochanan, who tells us that simply by declaring willingness to pay, right, if the Shomer Chinam declared, Hareini Mishalem, that's enough. Pshita, so this following case is pretty clear. Omar eini mishalem. Suppose initially he refused to pay. No, I'm not going to pay. I'm going to, you know, swear. I'm going to walk away. And then he retracted, came around. V'chazav Omar eini mishalem, willing to pay. And now we found the ganav. What happens? Hokam eini mishalem. Fact is, he came around. He offered to pay, so he gets the kefal. Elo Omar eini mishalem. But suppose he started by offering the money. V'chazav Omar eini mishalem. Then he came around and turned down the offer. No, he retracted his offer. I'm not going to pay. My, what's the halacha now? Mi amrina shall we say, mi ahad akad abay, he retracted his offer. He's no longer entitled to the kefal. Dilma or b'musikai, really, his offer is still outstanding. His earlier offer. But you know, he's just trying to delay things. It's sort of a delay tactic. I'm not going to pay. Really, he means to pay, but you know, he needs a couple of days to put it together. So perhaps he still retains the right to the kefal. Interesting shayla. Next question. We have a string of questions. Omar, suppose initially he would have said, "Areini mishalem, I'm going to pay." Umeis, he passed away. His kids came to the four and they said, "Ba'amru banav einan mishalem, no, we're not paying." And then we discover the ganav. What happens? My mi amrina mehad kadribu. Shall we say that they're retracting their father's offer and they're no longer entitled? I do more, but most of the women come. Certainly, they want to uphold their father's offer. But you know, they're having a hard time financially. Suppose you know they're just trying to delay things, but really they plan on sticking to his offer. Next question. Shumu banimai. Suppose the father was with the shomer, and the animal was stolen, right? And he didn't have a chance to really deal with the owner. And the kids did. The kids came forward and said, "You know, we're going to pay." Right? Either they paid or they offered. My, what's the halacha in this case? Do they get the kefal, or perhaps this whole sugya, this whole halacha of getting the kefal is specific to the father himself, who was an acquaintance of the owner? Motzi amalu, can the owner say to the kids, "Look, sorry kids, ki aknoi kefalu labuchin. I was willing to give the kefal to your father. He's a good friend of mine. Davidli naichav shoy, he helped me out many times. But you're strangers to me. Lidetchu loy, it doesn't apply to you. Idilmu or loishna, it doesn't matter. Father, kids, all the same thing." Next question. Shilam libanemai. Suppose the shomer paid to the owner's kids. So basically the item was stolen, right? And the shomer is willing to pay to the kids of the owner. My, what happens now? Is he zoich and the kefal or not? Motzu amrle. Perhaps the kids can claim to the shomer, ki akhin lo chabunok kefalo. Our father was willing to give the kefal to you because he was a good friend of yours. The Agus Lei Naichnav Shei, because you helped him, you know, you were friendly with him, you offer, you know, you were his right-hand man. Aval Nanu Didan, but between you and us, we have no relationship, Loi, so therefore we're not willing to give you anything. I do more, Loi Shno, no, makes no difference. Next question. Shilmu Banu Labanamai. Suppose both original parties are not around anymore. The Shomer and the owner passed away, now the kids are dealing with the kids and they're offering to pay. Next question. Shilem Machzamai. Suppose the Shomer initially offered to pay half. Does he get half the kefal or not? Next question. Let's say he borrowed two animals and something happened and he paid for one. So on the one hand, you can say, offering half payment is not enough. In the previous question, offering half payment is not enough. It's either all or nothing. But here, it's a bit different because when he pays for half, it's really paying for a full animal. So perhaps that's considered paying in full for this animal. So he gets the kefal of that animal. Right? My, what's the halacha? Next question. Suppose he borrowed an animal from two partners, right? an animal owned by Shutfin, and when the mishap occurred, he paid half of the value to one of the partners. He paid him his part. Does he get at least that part of the kefla or not? Right, might. Shutfin Shishalu. What about the reverse case? You have two partners borrowing an animal from an owner, and this mishap occurs. Mishilim echad men, and one of the borrowers decided to pay. Might. What happens now? Does he get at least, you know, half the rights or not? Shalmana isha mishilim lebalamai. Suppose a person borrows a para that belonged to a married woman, and instead of paying the isha, he paid the husband. Does he get the kefla or not? Shall we say, look, he didn't pay the owner. On the other hand, the owner, the husband, is administering her assets, so he's a player. And paying to him is tantamount to paying to the owner, which gives you the right to kefla. And finally, all right, Mai. Finally, isha sheshalo v'shilim balamai. Go the other way around. A married woman borrowed an animal, and the animal, you know, something happened, right? And now, right, it was stolen. Now the husband stepped forward and paid, stepped up to the plate and paid for the isha. Well, on the one hand, the owner got compensated. He should be giving him the kefla. On the other hand, it wasn't coming from the borrower themselves. It was coming through a third party, the owner, the husband. So basically, in all these questions taken, we let it stand. We haven't really resolved them. Amar Rav Huna. The Mishnah says if the shomer decides to pay rather than swear, right? And then the ganav is located, he pays the kefil to the shomer. Comes Rav Huna and says, look, don't think you're totally absolved from swearing. You still have to make one shvua. Amar Rav Huna mashbin oisoi shvua shein bershusoi. Even when the shomer decides to pay to compensate the owner, he has to make one shvua midrabanan, which is, I'm swearing that the item is no longer in my possession. It was really stolen. Why? Why is this so important? My time, I'm concerned. Shema einav nasam bo. Perhaps the shomer appears to be more generous than he really is. He laid his eyes on the item. He likes the animal, so he pocketed the animal, pretending that it was stolen. He's paying for it, like a generous fellow. Really, he took it to himself. So he has to make a shvua that he doesn't have it in his possession. Maybe we're going to have a kasha on this halacha. There's a mishnah in Maseches Shvois. Hamavas chaver al mashkin. Reuven lent Shimon money on a mashkin in exchange for a collateral, right? Vavad a mashkin, Reuven misplaced the collateral. The question is, who owes who, right? Va'amar loy, and now we have several cases, okay? So we have here the first case, the lender is the one launching the claim. Reuven to Shimon. Reuven says to Shimon, look, I gave you a full sella. Sella is worth 2 shekel. I lent you a full sella. And your mashkin was a measly shekel or yeshava. It was only worth a half of a sella, only worth a shekel. So fine, I lost it. Okay, so let's deduct the shekel, but you still owe me a shekel. What does Shimon, how does Shimon respond? Shimon says, no, what are you talking about? The loan is paid in full, because the mashkin was worth a full sella. You only lent me a sella because I gave you a mashkin worth a sella, and you lost it. So we're even, Stephen. Like it, it's not so. Ella sella, v'sani elav. True, you lent me a sella, but sella yishava, the item that gave us worth a sella, and you lost it, pater. So now Shimon is in total denial. It's called a kefer hakoyles pater. Case number two. Once again, Reuven is opening the claim by saying, sella v'sicha elav, I lent you a sella, right? Same as before. Shekel yishava, but the item was only worth a shekel. So basically the same claim as before, you owe me a shekel. And Shimon responds by saying, look, part right and part wrong. Loiki, it's inaccurate. Ella sella hulisani alav. True, you lent me a sella, but the item was worth more than a shekel. Shloisha dinonim hayushava. It was worth 3/4 of a sella. A sella has 4 dinar. So now he's partially admitting to Reuven's claim, because he's admitting that he still owes him something. He can deduct 3/4 of the sella, but he owes him 1/4. Chayev, then Shimon has to make a shvur. Okay, so this is the first part of the brisa where Reuven, the lender, is the one launching the claim. Now we have the seifa of the Mishnah, where Shimon, the borrower, is one that's is the one that who's launching the claim against the lender. He claims to be owed money now. Sela chlevisani elo, says Shimon to Reuven, you know what? Remember, you lent me a sela, right? But I gave you a mashkin, and it was worth double beis hayeshava. You lost it, right? Pay me back. Give me at least a sela. Ruben denies it. He says, Loiki, it's not true. Ella sella visichalav. It's true, I lent you a sella, but the item was worth no more than a sella. Sella yeshava. So he's totally denying the claim. Potter, he doesn't have to pay. In the fourth case, we have sella visani alav. Once again, Shimon is starting by claiming that he borrowed a sella from Ruben, but shnaima yeshava, but the item that he gave him in exchange was worth two. So he owes him back one. Valoima, Ruben denies. He says, Loiki, it's not true. Ella sella visichalav. I lent you a sella. Hey, denonima yeshava. The mashkin was worth 5 dinar. Right? A sell is 4 dinar, so it was worth 5 dinar, and I lost it. So he claims. He claims he lost it. So now I have to give you back how much? 1 dinar, right? Because I lent you a sella. The mashkin was worth a sella plus a dinar. So the sella, first sella is sort of cancelled out because of the loan, and I owe you the extra dinar. Chayav, so his shvua is in place because he's a moed of mitzvahs. He's partially admitting to Shimon's claim. The question is, who makes the shvua? Mi nishba? Mi shapikodin etzli? Who makes the shvua? The one who was in possession of the mashkin. You know why? The malva, the lender. Why? Shemi yishava zeh. Because the concern is that if the loiver is the one that steps up and makes the shvua to confirm the value of the mashkin, you know what might happen? Perhaps the mashkin is really here. It was never misplaced. And the malva might produce the pikadin, to produce the mashkin. He's setting up the loiver for failure. He's going through this whole back and forth, this argument, and he's compelling the loiver to make a shvua, hoping that he's going to swear in a way that it can be disproven. Simply by pulling out the mashkin and proving the loiver wrong. Once again, into trouble, right? So therefore we say, look, you know what? You're having this disagreement. Somebody has to make a shvua. Rather than have the loiver swear, which carries the danger of being proven false, and, you know, if you swear falsely, you become pusillators, right? We don't want to risk that. So rather than having the loiver swear, we say to the malva, look, you're the one that had the pikadin, right? You're the one that had access to the item. You make the shvua to confirm the numbers. Okay, so that's the Mishnah. Mi nishba, mi shapikodin etzloi, right? Shem yishava zeh, concerned that if the loiver makes a shvua, v'yoyitza lesa pikodin, the malva might produce the pikodin, the item, and disprove the loiver's words. Ahai, now, these words, this halacha of the Mishnah, instructing the malva to swear, not the loiver, what case is it pertaining to? Remember, we had a resha where the malva launched the claim. We have a seifa where the leiva launched the claim. Ilema seifa is going on the second part of the Mishnah, where it turns out that the malva is in partial denial, right? So in any case, who makes the shvua? The one who's made the mikzas, the malva. So without any additional factors, the malva in any case is making the shvua, right? So in any case, the shvua gabi malvi. In any case, the malva is making the shvua without all these concerns. He's the one that's partially admitting to the borrower's claim. Rather, says Shmuel, we're going back to the first part of the Mishnah, where the borrower, where the lender is the one that's launching the claim against the borrower. We had two cases there, remember? Maya Resha. What do you mean the Resha? Which part of the Resha? I say for the Resha. The second part of the Resha, which involves the Leiva being Maida to part of the Malva's claim. I say for the Resha. So what happened? The Malva, the lender, claimed Sela, Hubisicha Alav. I lent you a Sela for the Mashkin. Shekel Yeshava. You gave me a Mashkin, it was only worth half. It was not a Shekel. I lost it, fine. But now, at least give me the other Shekel. Valo Imar and the owner says, what are you talking about? Loiki, that's not true. Ella sella v'sani olav. You lent me a sella, that's true. Shloisha dinar ha'yishava, but the item that I gave you was worth more than just a shekel. It was worth three quarters of a sella. So true, I owe you something because it's not a full sella. Chayev, so now he's chayev eshvur. The shvur gabi leiva, who? So in this case, minatayra, the leiva has to swear because he's the maid of mikzas, but we make exception because of that concern of becoming apostle, but Amar Rabban say, look, instead of the Levi making a shvua, we transfer the shvua to the Malva, who had access to the item. So he doesn't play any tricks. L'shtava Malva, the Malva makes a shvua. Sheva, because we're concerned, Shema Yishava Zeh, if the Levi swears as to the value of the item, he might be proven false through the Malva who's setting him up for failure. So therefore, the Malva makes a shvua. Now the question is, Vim Isla with Rav Huna. Now according to Rav Huna's idea, that when a shamer who comes forth and, you know, admits to the item being stolen from him and offers to pay, he's still obligated to confirm that the item is not in his possession, right? So over here as well, the malva sort of takes the place of the shamer. The malva is the one who had the mashkin here and he claims to have lost it, right? So basically he's compensating the borrower for the lost item, right? So it's a very similar case to our Mishnah. If we're going to go with Rav Huna's idea, so once we compel the malva to make that special shvua, I swear the item is not in my possession. So that allays our fears, that addresses any concerns that we may have that the malva might pull out the pigadon. He doesn't have it. He made a shvua as such. How could he produce the item? Okay, so we'll see Be'ez Hashem tomorrow. We'll have several terutzim to this kash. Bottom line, we learned the technical procedure of how the shomer gets rights to the kefal. Rabbi Yechon had a chiddush, even simply offering to pay is sufficient to grant him those rights. We had a string of questions regarding children and husbands and wives, all that. Rav Huna's chiddush, that even though he's willing to pay, but just to confirm that he didn't lay his hands on it, we make him swear, shvua she'ena b'rishusay. All the best to you and atzlocha, Rabbah.